This is the Two Bald Nerds Podcast. Hey there, welcome back to another episode of the Two Bald Nerds Podcast. I'm one of the nerds, I'm one of the bald nerds, Mark Stuchowski, also host of the Mark Stuchowski Podcast. And the other person on this podcast is my cousin and my good friend. And well, you could say what your name is.
Oh, thanks for that. My name is Dan Bourne.
I was going to say everything, just go on with the show and just not let you talk.
Hey, man, you know, give me a break.
So the topic of the show, as you can tell from the title, it's all about Bitcoin and blockchain and cryptocurrency and Ethereum. And the reason why I came up with this topic for the show, because Danny and I go back and forth. He comes up with a topic and then it's my turn. So now Danny's in the hot seat for the next topic. But I wanted to learn something. And I've been hearing a lot about blockchain and Bitcoin. I didn't know what it was. And so I did some research and it's finally starting to sink in. I mean, I finally watched a couple videos and did some research. I'm like, I think I finally get it. So was it your experience, Danny?
Yeah. I mean, even being the nerd that I am, I never really got into the whole blockchain Bitcoin thing. Like the blockchain technology itself seemed pretty cool, but when it first came out, I looked into it a little bit and then I just kind of let it go and I just wasn't really that interested in it. But this whole thing has re-sparked some interest. So thank you for that, Mark.
Well, you're welcome. So let's start off. I want to give a little disclaimer here that most of the stuff I'm going to talk about is some 99 Bitcoins on YouTube. I highly recommend, if you don't have a clue about Bitcoin and we kind of whet your appetite, then just go to look up 99 Bitcoins on YouTube. They do a fantastic job. It's all in plain English. So this is the key point. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to say the key point and I'm going to bounce it back to Danny, let Danny give his thoughts on this. So money today is centralized and virtually unlimited, which is not a good thing because when you print a lot of money, it goes to inflation. So it's centralized and you don't have control of your money. The government, the courts, whoever can steal all your money. They can freeze your accounts. Well, with Bitcoin, it's decentralized and you have full control of your money. I thought this was extremely interesting when you compare the Bitcoins versus the banks. Now, Bitcoin is a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. So did you know that much about Bitcoin, Danny?
I did know that it was peer-to-peer. I didn't know that it was specifically... I knew that Bitcoin was a payment system. I didn't know that the Bitcoin network itself was predominantly was only a payment system. Because again, back when this first came out, I was more interested in the blockchain technology behind Bitcoin versus what Bitcoin actually was.
Well, the guy who created it was Satoshi Nakamoto, and we don't know if that's his real name. He wrote a white paper a number of years ago, and this whole thing called Bitcoin began to start. First of all, just like there's nothing in the cloud, there is no physical Bitcoins. It's bit because bits of the code of the internet. Now, here's the thing. Blockchain, that really confused me. Blockchain is just the Bitcoin terminology for the ledger. Now, you can't go to your bank, listener, and look at their ledger. They'd say, this is none of your business. We'll let you know what you have, but you can't look at the entire ledger. Well, Bitcoin looks a little differently. Anybody that's part of Bitcoin can look at the blockchain ledger, blockchain/ledger. Now, you may go, wait a minute, isn't there privacy concerns there? No, there's not, because you can't see the identities of all these transactions. So you can actually see the ledger, again, that's known as the blockchain, but you don't know who this address goes to and who this address sent money to or received money to. That's the critical thing. It is decentralized, and the privacy is incredible. Now, we're going to talk in just a few minutes something that really gets up in the Danny's area specialties, you know, all the bit mining, you know, technology and how do you mine Bitcoin. I thought that was absolutely fascinating. But here's the thing. If you want to know how secure Bitcoin is, because if you're in Bitcoin and you're part of the blockchain, and a government wanted to shut it down. Well, the only way you can really shut it down is you have to shut down the internet. And even then, you probably don't shut it completely down because there's all these devices that you can have, like USB sticks and stuff like that. So it is pretty much totally decentralized. And when I first heard that, I had watched the video three times, Danny, and I'm like, oh, I get it now, because every computer that's on the blockchain is part of the network, and they all have copies of the blockchain. Or remember, the blockchain is a ledger that you have to take all those computers down, and nobody has that kind of power.
Yeah, that's correct. I actually have a very another way to look at the whole what blockchain is. So if you think about it, the block refers to the data and the state that is being stored for a particular bit of information. Blocks are consecutive groups of those. And the blockchain are these blocks that are chained together. You can't change one block without changing the whole chain. And the blockchain is stored on multiple computers throughout the world. So when you change it in one place, you literally have to change it everywhere in order for it to be correct. And in order for you to change it everywhere, there has to be a consensus across the entire network. So when you're adding blocks to the blockchain, there's a transaction that happens that there has to be consensus for you to actually add blocks to the blockchain. That's where some of the mining stuff comes in, which you're going to talk about as well.
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting. Now, here's some of the advantages of Bitcoin. Users have full control over the money. You and you alone have access to your funds. Now, if you know, someone hacks your account because you're stupid enough to leave your password around, that's your fault. But the passwords are not like 20 characters. There's like a big block of text. It's very secure. There's no middleman for transferring funds. It's programmable. That's something Danny would really get into. And it's open to everyone. And what the videos were saying is there are people in this world, they estimate 2.1 billion people who don't participate in any banking system. They could still do this because you can actually get apps on your phone and then buy and sell and all kinds of stuff using Bitcoin and not be part of the financial institution. Now, I thought it was really interesting. I did some research on who accepts Bitcoin, because we've all been hearing Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, et cetera, et cetera. Well, some companies that you've probably heard of, Microsoft, Home Depot, Twitch, Whole Foods, Gift. Or is it Gift? I'm not sure. Save the Children, Virgin Airlines, Overstock.com, Wikipedia. My little teeny tiny credit union here in Houston takes it. And my homeboy, Uncle G, Grant Cardone, he takes Bitcoin. So I think that's very interesting that more and more people are accepting Bitcoin. Now, it's really expensive and it is very volatile. But the main driver of this is it's decentralized. No country or government or court or, you know, what do you call those dictator can shut down blockchain. They can't shut down Bitcoin. And I find that, although I can't get into Bitcoin right now, I love the part that is totally decentralized from everything.
Yeah, the decentralized part is very interesting in that the ledger itself is stored on all these different machines. You can kind of liken it to YouTube has a open source competitor, if you will. It's not very big, called PeerTube, where you host your videos on a peer-to-peer network. So basically what it is instead of having everything on Google servers, you can host it on your server. You can host it on somebody else's server. You can host bits and pieces of it on multiple people's computers. And that's what a peer-to-peer is. A peer-to-peer is basically you're creating connections between. So whether it's blockchain, whether it's another type of network, when anybody says peer-to-peer, it's multiple individual computers, whether it's a cloud computer, whether it's your computer or my computer. We connect directly to each other, and then we share resources. That's basically what peer-to-peer is.
And what's interesting, a lot of people will say, well, the internet's decentralized. No, it's not. go to China and try to get on Facebook or Instagram.
Exactly.
Or go to India and try to, I think it's Spotify or something. So the internet is not decentralized. There are people controlling. And if you have been paying attention to what's happening in America, there's a lot of censorship going on and a lot of shenanigans going on behind the scenes. So the internet is not decentralized, but Bitcoin and the blockchain completely is. Nobody has complete control over that. So one of the things I find really interesting, let me scroll down my notes here if my thing will work here. So there's things called wallets. You know, we think of a wallet, that the old-fashioned wallet, you put some, you know, dollar bills, your credit cards in there or something like that. But there is a multiplicity of different wallets. I'm not going to go over all these extensively because I want Danny to chime in about how you mine Bitcoin in a few minutes, because that really, I mean, that was, if you're using a meter where you can tell if, like, the boiler's about ready to blow, that's where my brain was, and I was understanding all the mining. So I'm going to let Danny talk about it's just computers, but it gets really complex. So here are some of the wallets you can talk about, you can have. There's a simple payment verification wallet, which is that's stuff you would use maybe to buy something at Starbucks or something like that. There's hot wallets. Now, hot wallets are called hot wallets because they're constantly connected to the internet. They don't recommend that. There's desktop wallets. Again, they don't recommend this because you're constantly connected to the internet. It's not secure. Mobile wallets, they're not secure. Those are things that might be on your phone. They recommend cold storage wallets to really protect your Bitcoin. This is independent of any internet connection. Like, there's something called a paper wallet. And what you do is you actually write down your code, your password code. Of course, then you have to enter it into your mobile app to send and receive money. There's hardware wallets. Now, hardware wallets, think of like a USB stick, like a very robust USB stick that's got your password on there. And then there's brain wallets. And this is where you actually create your own password. And then the wallet does its magic to keep it secure. Something I thought was really interesting is something called multi-sig or multi-signature. So let's say you have a business and you have three people who are in the business, but you don't want one person to have all access to all the funds, because right now, if someone's got the corporate credit card or the corporate check, they can just go spend the money. Well, with multi-sig, I really like this feature, Danny, is there's three people in our example. Let's say you set it up in the beginning that two people have to approve it. So let's say Danny and I and John Doe own a company, and John Doe is not so honest like Danny and I are, and he wants to go use our Bitcoin funds to go buy a new Maserati or something. He can't do it if we locked it down to two. So I kind of like the multi-sig. You can do, like, if you've got seven people, you can say five of the seven or three of seven. So I kind of like that feature, because I don't think I've never seen that anywhere else. Have you heard of any other current monetary system or transactional system that has a multi-sig function?
No, the only thing I can think of is some of the stuff is you've heard of two-factor authentication.
Yes.
So that would be the only thing, is that a lot of these sites are using 2FA now, which is two, right? So you'd have to log in with a username or password, and then they might send a code to you, like your phone or your email account or something. That's technically would fall under multi-sig, but it's only two.
Right. But makes sense. So now let's get into Bitcoin mining. So Bitcoin mining is the process of confirming transactions on the blockchain. It's mining's a guessing game. Now, I watched this video like three times, and I had to start taking notes, and I passed them on to Danny, because it's all about computers. Now, way back in the beginning, when they first came out with Bitcoin, you could go and just use your laptop. Those days are long gone. You cannot use just your laptop anymore, because this thing is constantly running computations, and it can overheat your computer, and it's very interesting. So, Danny, why don't you walk us through there's only four major types of mining. But it's really, this is like where the nerd in you really comes out, because this is all about computational power.
Yeah. So a couple of these I know of, a couple of these I had never heard of. And I'll be honest, I hadn't had a chance to actually look up these last two, the FPGA mining and the ASIC mining. I actually think I've heard of the ASIC ASIC mining. But I think I heard it called something else. But I, it relates to the same thing because it was a hardware device that's specifically designed for mining Bitcoin. So I'm assuming that's ASIC.
Yes. And you can't, it's what I found on this is it's the function of mining is hard coded. So it's not like your laptop. You can like go in there, like you're a Linux guy. You can go mess around the code.
Yeah. You don't rewrite designed, it or anything. Yeah.
Yeah. This is designed for that. But where's the first step of the mining?
So the first step of the mining is with CPU mining. Right. So if you think about it in terms of that would be something that you or I could do on our laptops, computers at home. It's just a, using the central processing unit of your machine to run these calculations for mining.
Now, you can't do that anymore, obviously, because it's the blockchain's too big. Forget that idea.
Yep. So forget that idea. In the beginning, that was pretty easy to do. Now, forget it. Not even a viable option anymore. GPU mining, which is still a very viable option, is the next thing. So this is basically taking a graphics card. If you think about it, all these graphics cards that are out there that people use for gaming have these graphical processing units on it, which are specifically used for running complex calculations because games have gotten really complex and they've offloaded a lot of this complex processing to these GPUs for game engine rendering. But you can also reuse them if you're not using them for gaming to mining Bitcoin. There's actually software that you can run on your machine that will take advantage of a graphics card or graphics cards that you chain together to mine Bitcoin specifically. So that's the other way you could do it. The FPGA, these are almost like graphics cards on steroids. Again, I didn't get a chance to check into this very much, but I think they're like graphics cards on steroids. And I think they're starting to put a lot of these in like cloud computers to do it that way. As a side note, you can also rent space, GPU only space in the cloud. Now I saw that coming through. I have a couple of accounts with like groups like DigitalOcean, which is a cloud provider of systems. And they now have this option. It's not cheap. I will tell you that it's not cheap, but you can actually rent GPU processing power only where they've installed these really high-end graphics cards inside their machines and you can use them for processing whatever you need to process. Bitcoin is one of the reasons I got away from not even caring about Bitcoin because as a person who likes to build my own computers and I've built a number of systems over the years for gaming, I'm not so much of a gamer anymore, but my godson, Zach, is a big-time gamer. I always like to go out and buy the latest and greatest graphics card, or at least one generation back. Once these guys figured out that they could use GPUs for mining, there was a wave of purchases on graphics cards, so much so that it inflated the price of graphics cards so much that a graphics... And this is before any of this inflation that we're in now. Think about just 3-4 years ago. A graphics card that I could pay $200 for were being sold on eBay for $900 to $1,100.
Wow.
So I gave up like buying new the new graphics cards that you can get today. The prices are so ridiculous. I don't even buy new graphics cards anymore. I'm back to doing maybe 3 to 4 generations old if I want to upgrade. And that's all because of this whole mining thing.
Regardless
of what you're mining. That's kind of where my disassociation from Bitcoin mining got into. Because I was so mad at Bitcoin for spiking the prices of my graphics cards. I'm like, I don't even care about Bitcoin. The best way to explain mining in general is the reason they use the term mining is it kind of goes back to gold or precious metal. So with any of these blockchains, they're all based on an algorithm that generates a finite number of units. It's an algorithm that'll generate a finite number of units. Now, it could be a very large number. I can't remember what the Bitcoin was. The Ethereum one is like one with like... So the Ethereum blockchain is a bigger blockchain than the Bitcoin blockchain, but it's like one with like 12 or 18 zeros after it. But it's a finite number. The mining is basically using a computer or using processing power to solve complex mathematical puzzles to basically generate these units. That's basically what you're doing. You're doing two things. You're using it to generate the next unit that's available for consumption. And it's also a way to do security, because as you mine, you're also use it's a way to secure it, because you're creating this unit, and as you're creating it, you're also verifying it, and you're publishing it, and you're propagating those new blocks to the rest of the blockchain all at the same time. Again, very hard to hack something when it's taking that much process to create it, and you're basically birthing this thing into existence, this bit of information, and adding it to the blockchain all in like one step. But it's a complicated step.
And what they said is, in the early days, it was really easy for your CPU/GPU to get to guess the right algorithm code, whatever.
Yep.
Now there's so many devices on the network. The guy who created this said the more people who get on the blockchain, the more difficult it gets to guess what that code is. And I still don't have my whole mind wrapped around this, but I just want to go back. I hope I haven't lost anybody yet, but the whole point is it's decentralized and it's secure. Just camp out on that. So Danny alluded to something called the Ethereum, which is like, is that part of the Bitcoin? Is that what they call the Bitcoin network blockchain, or is that a totally different blockchain?
No. So Ethereum kind of spawned out of the idea of blockchain and Bitcoin. So Bitcoin came first, and the Ethereum is basically what they did is they said, we like the idea of this blockchain concept of having this decentralized algorithmic thing that can't be controlled by anybody, and it's mathematically controlled and all that, but we don't want it to be just for payments. So this is where they created the Ethereum blockchain, and Ethereum is really a network of computers that runs the Ethereum blockchain, but they've built into it the ability to not limit it to just doing transactions that are payment-based. This is where that programmability that you mentioned earlier comes in.
But the same thing applies to Bitcoin. Like a government or a court or a nation can't take down the Ethereum either.
Yes, because it's all the same thing. It's all peer-to-peer. So it's all being run on computers that are spread across the world. And the blockchain is basically maintained on all these computers, and the ledgers are all open. So it's the very same similar premise. The interesting thing about Ethereum is they created a programming language called Solidity that allows you to create applications that will then run on this Ethereum network and do certain things. So you could create a transaction to say, check for the rent to come in. If the rent comes in, I got some of this from the Bitcoin 99 guys and some of it from the Ethereum.org website. But he gave the example of, I created an app that, and these apps are all self-running. So once you put them out there and you have to pay in Ether, which I'll get to in a minute. But basically, once you create an app and you put it out on the blockchain, on the Ethereum blockchain, and it's running out there, it costs. If you think about it, everything costs, every transaction costs, and the cost is whatever currency it is. Now, Ethereum is the network that all this stuff runs on, and then they created their own currency called Ether that is like their Bitcoin for their network, if you think about it that way. That's how they transact the cost of things happening on the Ethereum network. But let's say I write a program that tracks rent. So I have a renter that has to pay a certain time of the month. If they pay a certain time of the month, everything's good. Everything goes on. If they don't pay at a certain time of the month, then what's going to happen is it's going to lock them out of their apartment. I write a program that tracks, when is it paid? Is it paid? Did it show up? Did the payment happen? If the payment happened on time, you let the guy back into his apartment. If it didn't, you lock the door and he can't get back in. Once I build that program and put it on the Ethereum network, first of all, I don't have control of that program anymore. I can't change it. I can't modify it. It becomes what's called immutable, right? But then it's stored on all of the computers because it's now part of the blockchain. So now it's stored on all of the computers, and it can be run from any one of those computers. there's very strict rules. I don't want to get too deep into the weeds in it because I'm still trying to wrap my head around some of it. They call them smart contracts because it's like a lot of, you know, conditions and actions, and it's very strictly enforced. There was a split in the Ethereum group. They have a classic Ethereum versus Ethereum, which allows us that there's like a split in the philosophy where they wanted to keep more strict control. So they have Ethereum Classic and they have a newer version of Ethereum, which is like they give a little bit more leeway to whether or not these apps can should be able to be changeable and how you would go about changing it. That happened a few years ago. It gets very complicated very fast. But if you think about it, at the end of the day, the idea of Ethereum at its central core is using the blockchain to create a decentralized network, which they hope one day would act as a decentralized internet. And then Ether is the currency that they're using right now to transact against this decentralized network.
So let me ask you a question. I want you to make a prediction. Do you think that we are going to see more adaptation of cryptocurrency 23, 24, 25, 26? Or do you think this is going to kind of peter out?
I think it's going to be a war. I think it's going to be a battle for a while. A lot of governments don't like this.
Oh, of course. Neither the banks.
because they lose control. Yeah. The banks don't like it. Corporations that are tied to governments, Facebook, Google, don't like this because they're giving up a large element of control. So as long as you have these large organizations that are firmly in place, they are going to try and squash this at every manner they can. So whereas they cannot shut it down, right? I have heard some recent stories where there are some countries in the world that are like banning Bitcoin in that country. I still don't understand how you ban something that can't be shut down. But again, they're making a political statement more than anything. The more you do that, right, the more you're influencing companies or people or whatever from using that particular thing, whether it be Bitcoin. And then you have the opposite problem where you have some of these banks that are saying, oh, Bitcoin's a great idea, but we need a little regulation around it. So we're going to create another form. We're going to use a similar technology, a blockchain, but we're going to create another form. That's where you get things like Dogecoin and Coinbase and a bunch of these other digital currencies, quote unquote, that are popping up. They seem to be popping up all over the place. They show up, they go away, they show up, they go away. Yeah. Obviously, Bitcoin's the granddaddy of them because you obviously see that some governments and companies are trying to figure out how do we get this and make it palatable to people, but acquire some modicum of control. So I think from a future perspective, I think this is going to be a long battle. The one thing that I do see that I didn't see mentioned in any article that I've read so far is that when it comes to this whole concept of decentralization, we still have to remember that no matter how much you decentralize banking, no matter how much you decentralize finance, no matter how much you decentralize these digital coin, whatever you're looking at, there's still these things called ISPs that actually run the internet at the network level.
Good point.
Right? Like, you can't get on the internet unless you contract with a Google or a Greenlight or a Spectrum or, I don't know, what's the other big one? Cox or Charter used to be around. Anyway,
Comcast.
Verizon, Comcast, right? So without contracting with one of those particular companies, you can't even access the internet. There's no way to even transact decentralized if you can't get on the internet at all. Elon Musk is trying to get around that with his new venture that he's got with the satellites, right? But again, all of that at some point costs some sort of cost to that. Yeah. So that's the one thing that I honestly was kind of surprised I hadn't seen anybody talking about. Of course, all of these, they're pushing their thing, which is a good thing. They're pushing the decentralization. And I do get the whole concept of this fiat money, right? We've abandoned the gold standard. Those videos of the introductory, which kind of gives the brief history of going from the gold standard to now what we have is fiat money to why we kind of need a solution like Bitcoin. Impressive and very informative. So I check it. I'm with Mark. Definitely go check out. What is it?
99 Bitcoins.
99 Bitcoins. They've got a lot of stuff, and they really do break it down a lot better than either one of us could do it. I mean, those guys are pretty good. Like some of their analogies are really good too. But just the fact that, you know, right now we're in a system where everything's based on paper. We are literally trading paper, which has no value. Yep. So people are always worried about inflation, and a lot of times inflation doesn't have to do with the fact. Have anything to do with the fact that what you're actually buying, the price of that actually is going up. The problem is there's too much money in the market, which makes the value of every dollar go down, which makes everything more expensive. So it's not necessarily that things are more expensive to make or to buy. It's that your money is worth less, so you need more of it. They gave the example in there that in some countries, I think it was Venezuela, they've given up on counting their money and they weigh their bills now.
Yeah.
Because it's so devalued.
Yeah. So to give you an idea, we recorded this on Wednesday, September 7th, and it gets released on Monday. So I'm going to ask my girl here, what is Bitcoin currently trading at? What is Bitcoin currently trading at?
Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, BTC, was up 3.92% today, trading at $12.18.
Okay, that's not what I was expecting. What is the value of Bitcoin today?
Grayscale Bitcoin
Okay, Trust, that's. BTC. I thought it was like $2,000 or something ridiculous.
Yeah, I actually have it here. So if I go today, I have this site up. Let me just find it. Coin... So there's this CoinMarketCap website. Okay, so if we look at, just pull this up on the fly. So Bitcoin right now, the price of one Bitcoin is $19,326.94. That's the number one. Number two is Ethereum or Ether, which is trading at $1,637.29. So... Wow. And they fluctuate. Like I'm watching these things jump around a little bit. So Bitcoin within the last hour, it's down 0.39% and Ether is down 0.78%. But over the last 24 hours, they're both up between 2% and 4%.
Yeah. Most people, and I did not get into this because again, we're over 30 minutes. I didn't want to make a long episode. I haven't even gotten the videos yet. Like how do you send and receive and all this. There's so much to Bitcoin. I just wanted to share with the listener a little bit about Bitcoin. And I encourage you, whether you go to 99 Bitcoins on YouTube or something else, just go do your research. So someone goes, oh, have you heard about smart contracts? You don't have to know how to execute a smart contract, but you should know what a smart contract is. You should know what the blockchain is. I did not know it was a fancy name for ledger. Just do your homework. Just gift yourself maybe 30 minutes. Go to 99 Bitcoins and just watch. They have a playlist on the introduction to cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. Just watch those videos.
Yeah.
It's incredible because a lot of people, and we talked about this before, Danny, they go through life and they get frustrated. They don't understand what X, Y, and Z is. And I'm like, go learn. I mean, just go learn. I mean, how are you going to learn? You can either get frustrated and overwhelmed and angry and put your fist to a wall, or you can say, oh, let me go find out what this thing's all about. I mean, that's how I've learned about climate change. That's how I learned about a new way to take care of the drug problem in this country. And now I'm learning about Bitcoin. If you don't understand something in this age of 2022, there is absolutely no excuse for you not learning. There's YouTube, there's Google. Go out and learn and don't get frustrated. Learn what you want to learn.
Yep, absolutely. As a matter of fact, one of the guys that I've been listening to that's a Linux podcaster, he's been doing Linux podcasts for probably 15 years or so. I didn't realize this until I was looking today. He is big into trying to understand and learn about Bitcoin. And he's actually got a podcast on this called the Bitcoin Dad Pod. where he goes through, and they're about an hour long, but he takes different topics every, I think it's a weekly podcast, but he takes different topics revolving around Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies and kinds of breaks them down. He can get a little technical, so if you don't want to be too technical, you can try it out, but he's another good resource. And like I said, I've been listening to him. He's got a whole network of podcasts. I've been listening to a lot of his stuff for years, and he's very good. So I'm going to start listening to his stuff. I just found it today. So interesting
stuff.
Excellent.
Excellent. Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Two Bald Nerds podcast. I don't know what the topic is going to be next episode because that's up to Danny. And now the ball is in his court. I took the ball and threw it back over to him up in Rochester. So he's got to pick the topic. You know, we're trying to do something different. In the very beginning, it was really easy to come up with topics. Now it's like, man, what are we going to talk about now? And now we're getting in what I call the area of uncomfortableness, because talking about the nerdy stuff we're really familiar with, you know, Apple and the social media and stuff like that, that was easy. Now we're trying to come up with topics where we have to do homework. We have to do research for these shows. And I don't know about Danny, but I find that very exhilarating because now we're learning new things.
Oh, absolutely. I love it. And the more I learn, the more accomplished I feel.
Yes, 100%. So, Danny, do we have a WhatsApp group? I heard a rumor that there's a WhatsApp group that people can go to join and they can send us messages and talk about the show. Is that true?
Why, you would be correct, Mark. There is a WhatsApp group. So if you get on WhatsApp and you look for the number 2, Bald, B-A-L-D, and Nerds, N-E-R-D-Z, you can ask to join our group. Mark or I will let you in, and you can comment on any episodes. This episode, you can go back and listen to past episodes and comment on those. You can give us show topic ideas. A lot of times we'll post links if we have links. Like, we'll put the links to 99 Bitcoins and this podcast in here for the show. We'll put that out there. We're trying to grow that group because right now, sadly, it's just Mark and I. There's not a ton of activity in there, but
a lot of
we'd
crickets.
But we'd love to have people join in and chime in and get in there and state their mind, state their piece and whatnot. So yes, Two Bald Nerds, the number 2, Bald, and Nerds, N-E-R-D-Z.
Yeah, don't look for Two Bald Nudes. We have no idea what you find. No.
Nope. Do not search for that one. Make sure it's N-E-R-D-Z.
Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness. So you tell us at the end of the day for both of us.
It is.
So anyways, we thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Two Bald Nerds podcast. Oh my God. Edit.
That's going to have to be, oh, sorry. I don't even know where that was just one of those slips, man. I was just trying to get it out one more time.
Oh my goodness.
Just came out wrong, man. That's right.
You had one of those days, man. You had to run all over Western New York and drive people here and there. So let's wrap this up. So, Danny, what is the one thing they have to do so they stay a member of our community?
Always remember to stay nerdy.